The network marketing industry has changed dramatically in the last decade. With the advent of social media, digital marketing, the rise of the influencer, and all the tech platforms that promise something extraordinary, how do you separate the helpful from the hype? Welcome to Beyond the Network Marketing Dream, where authenticity and relationships, simplicity and duplication are at the core of everything we focus on. The fundamentals of building still work. Join us as we go beyond the network marketing dream.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is Patrick Shaw, and I am here with Todd Falcone. And Todd, we ran into each other about a decade ago almost at an A&MP event. And you're not only building in the field, but you've been a coach and a trainer in the space for a really long time. Share a little bit of your backstory as we dive in here.
Yeah, no, I'd be happy to. Great to connect and great to be here with you. I've been in the network marketing space for 33 years, I think, if we go back to when I first began. Built in the field for 16, 17 years. Last decade and a half, I've been teaching and training around the world to network marketing company owners and their major events and different distributor organizations, and miss being in the field. So I hopped back in the field a couple of years ago and having a blast doing all the things that I've been teaching people to do for the last 16, 17 years. So it's just fun to be in this profession. It's a crazy, fun place to be. And I can't imagine myself being anywhere other than network marketing.
You know, it kind of changes your perspective, doesn't it? I mean, being in the field and things are changing so fast in the industry, does it change your perspective a little bit on how you're coaching or training, being active yourself?
That's an interesting question. I was at an event and somebody asked me, because they knew I was back in the field, they were like, hey, how much has it changed since like when you were in the field 16 years ago? And what's weird is I never really feel like I left the field because I'm so deeply connected with people that are building. And honestly, like some of my training, I'll do live prospecting in front of an audience, something I'm known for. So I never feel like I really left. But that's an interesting question. When people ask, like, how has network marketing changed? I think the premise of what we do hasn't changed at all. It's people finding a cool product or service that they can get behind, and they go out there and share that product or service and build a team around it. What has changed dramatically are the tools, the bells and the whistles, the things that we use every day. But other than that, I don't know that a lot really has changed.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. So the fundamentals, and I couldn't agree with you more. I think those really haven't shifted, but the environment or the tools. And we're seeing this huge shift almost with what are influencers, which I think is a little bit dangerous sometimes because they don't really know networking. What have you seen there? And do you think it's, I don't know what the right word is, dangerous for the industry or misleading to see some of these people just blow up really quick, but then not be able to maintain it? Or what are you seeing on that front?
Well, I guess it depends on what we're talking about with influencers. Like if we're talking about some big Instagram influencer and they get behind a product, like somebody who has a big following, right? That's why we call them an influencer, because they have a big following. Most influencers on Instagram, let's just pick on Instagram for a second. Like they'll figure out a way to monetize their following through some kind of brand offering, whatever it is, in or out of network marketing. And a lot of those people have found network marketing companies. There's one in particular that I'm thinking about that came out recently that she has a huge, huge following, like a couple million plus people, and she's well-liked and well-respected. And she recently partnered with a network marketing company. The interesting thing about that is I think with most influencers, they're really driving product sales more than building teams. They're going to go out there and say, hey, this is my product. I love this stuff. Check it out. Try it out. Go here. And so what I see with those types of influencers, that's what they're doing. They're driving pure product sales. It's almost like they're a quote affiliate for a network marketing company. I mean, even some network marketing companies call their reps affiliate, but most of those people aren't building teams. So I think also it depends on the company and the comp plan that they're attached to, because obviously comp plans dictate behavior. And so if a comp plan pays out well for customer acquisition, I think that's a good match for an influencer, knowing full well that that influencer is probably never going to be a business builder. Not to say never, but most of those people are just product and getting paid.
That brings up a great point, right? How a company designs a comp plan, who their target audience is based on that product, who they're trying to recruit, and vice versa. If you come at it from a distributor perspective, what kind of company should you be looking for based on your particular interest? And is it build really wide, recruit lots of people? It's not about building depth and momentum. You don't really hear anybody thinking about that on both sides of the equation. I don't think they build sometimes with the end in mind. Do you ever try to coach them on that, or have you given it a lot of thought?
Are you talking about influencers or just in general?
I'm talking about in general. The companies really saying, okay, when we incentives and structure drive a behavior, we're going to design this comp plan, and this is the behavior specifically that we're trying to drive. I just wonder how often they're thinking that deeply before they design their comp plan, or how often the rep is really trying to identify any of their strengths and weaknesses before they identify a company to go to work with.
I honestly don't think many companies or reps even think about that. Like if you think about the company owners putting it together, I don't want to say none of them do, but we know that in direct application in the field, however the compensation plan is designed, whether they thought about it or not, mm-hmm. wherever it pays the most for whatever activity, that's what people are going to go to. Mm-hmm. So if people make a ton of money gathering customers, they're going to go gather customers. If people make a ton of money building a big team and width and depth, that's what they're going to do. So I don't know, and I know a lot of owners, but I don't know how many of them are like, okay, so what kind of behavior is this going to create in the marketplace?
That's maybe it happens organically. It's just yeah. their nature. They're going to design it that way and it fits. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, most comp plans are, I guess, fairly similar. I mean, you should get rewarded for gathering customers and you should get rewarded for building a team. And I think company owners need to figure out a way is like, how can we create a comp plan where a part-timer can make some decent money and a full-timer to build a big team can make significant money?
We always talk about historically in the industry, duplication and simplicity and how important it was. And I came from an era where I had a fax machine, a phone, a VHS tape, and a meeting. Like it was really simple. There weren't 57 different ways. And now with all these digital tools, as you said earlier, it's become more complex. How are you seeing, or what are you seeing work specifically? Are those days gone of simplicity and duplication? Or how are you coaching people to try and quiet the noise?
I think we're in a better place than we've ever been in terms of the resources from an independent distributor standpoint. Like what we've got to do is arm our reps with tools and resources that they can go use to tell the story, right? So like you said, meetings, VHS tapes, cassette tapes, to CDs, to video, to streaming video. Those are the things that have changed. And what for sure dominates today more than anything is video. I run coaching programs every quarter, and without exception, when we go into a session, we talk about presentations. 99% of the responses is like, what are you putting people in front of? They're putting people in front of a video. And whether it's coming from an app that they're texting out to somebody or on a website or wherever it's planted, that is the number one way people are looking at or gathering information about an opportunity. So I think from that standpoint, it actually becomes even more narrow because video is the dominant thing. Think about it. Like back in the day, you and I probably ran opportunity conference calls and mailed out cassette tapes and mailed out VHS right. tapes and did PBRs and did live presentations. I do think that now that we're out of COVID, meetings are back. And that's one thing that like I think this industry in particular, I mean, or just human beings need to be around other human beings. And I think events are making a monstrous comeback.
And that's good to hear. I think it's an important part of the space. On the video front, though, it used to be that if you wanted to deliver a video, you delivered it via VHS. There was one option. That's the only way you delivered it. And then DVDs came and you said, hey, you want to watch this video? It only was on DVD, maybe the Blu-ray thing or something, yep. but it was DVD. But now when you say a video, it's 1,000 different platforms, and it's not about the video. Video obviously works. It's about, am I doing this on Instagram? And one person on the team says, I'm crushing it on Instagram. Somebody else is using YouTube. Somebody else is using loading videos into a capture page creator or a landing page. Somebody else is posting surveys to social, and they've signed up for a survey platform. And they've gone through a survey course, and you get all this, just these, and people that succeed, they make it work because they recruit a lot, but they create no depth or momentum or team or culture, but it misleads a lot of people in an organization. And we're seeing this where it's hard for leaders to drive, and that's part of the power of networking, isn't it? Or what are your thoughts? I mean, yeah, whatever your thoughts are, I'm just curious, like, how do you manage that? How do you coach through some of that?
there's people obviously that are, and I do it, I push out a ton of content through YouTube and through Facebook, Instagram. As a network marketing speaker, trainer, I'm putting out value content on how to succeed in network marketing. Now, a network marketer or somebody that doesn't have my background in network marketing, they're pushing out whatever they're pushing out to get that following to engage. But then when that following engages, it's like, okay, oh, this person's interested in my product, my brand, my company, or taking a look at what I'm doing. At that point, there's got to be some kind of communication, however that communication takes place. And then I'm going to guide or direct them into something. Like you mentioned YouTube, like it's crazy to me how many people will still send individuals to a YouTube video. Like I would never send you to a YouTube video as an opportunity presentation because first of all, marketers are very smart. And if it's company X, I'm going to produce a video that says, hey, the seven reasons why I didn't join company X or the four things you should think about before considering joining company X. And it's going to appear on the right side. And me, the prospect, because unfortunately people thrive on drama. What's going to happen is they're going to go, wait, I'm not watching this presentation. I'm
right.
Go.
But it's crazy the amount of companies that are still doing this stuff. I mean, that's
the thing.
Time, like, YouTube is selling advertising to your competitor to run it on that space where your video is being played. And I don't think a lot of companies understand how important, but you got to offer them something better than what this hodgepodge of people in the organization are doing. Otherwise, you can't create any momentum.
No, there's too much distraction on Facebook, because if I'm watching you on Facebook and you're giving a presentation, there's squirrels everywhere. So I'm going to go follow the squirrel.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, like if you were a prospect of mine and I wanted to get you in front of information, I want to get you in front of just that information where there's no other distraction, where there's nothing else on the side, on the top, on the bottom.
So, and then, you know, putting like, you know, obviously I'm founder, CEO of Rapid Funnel, putting all that aside, right? We think we have solutions for that. But what does the average person do now? They go in, train an organization and put that all aside and say, okay, what do you teach an organization to do? Like, what do you say to everybody in that room? I just came back from a big event and there's a gal up there who's a real influencer in social media. She's recruited 2,700 people, which I made more millions than I can count. And I may have recruited like 400 people lifetime. I mean, I was good at depth and momentum and teaching it nonstop. I recruited thousands, but I didn't recruit thousands. The team recruited hundreds of thousands. So how do you go in now to an organization? What do you tell them to do that everybody can go, oh, I can do that thing? Or do you just tell them to use their own channel to do it?
Look, here's the problem. Not everybody is an influencer.
Yeah.
Trying to teach somebody, and this is being done. I see it being done. I see it being taught. Like teaching somebody who has no influence to become an influencer.
Yeah. That's what they're like, doing.
You have influence because you have something to offer. So,
right.
And look, all human beings have something to offer. They have a special gift. You got to figure out what your gift is.
Yeah.
And then let's say, okay, I mean, take for example, like, I'm really good at fishing. So I could create a following around fishing. I haven't, but I could if I chose to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that have to do with network marketing? Nothing, but I could create a huge following around that. And then your followers end up going like, what do you do? Why are you out fishing all the time? Why do you have so much free time? There's a way for people to discover why I have the lifestyle and the ability to fish so much because of that. But it's being taught, like, brand yourself as an influencer. I'm like, dude, you don't even have an influence. You have 327 followers on Facebook. Your posts suck. They're boring. Everything that you do is crickets, even with the tiny audience that you have. I think what people should learn how to do in terms of creating more engagement on social media, instead of trying to brand themselves an influencer, is to just put out good quality, engaging content, which is going to increase the views, increase the likes, the comments, the shares, and over time is going to increase their audience size. But when I'm teaching someone to do network marketing, you call me old school. You just don't call me old. I mean, it's just, look, this business has never changed. Like, it's talking to people, exposing people to your products, to your business. And that's done through prospecting. It's done through exposure. Yeah, granted, you can do things on social media and you can put out content. You can do attraction marketing, which draws people into you. But if you're going to recruit that person in your business or sell them your product, you have to reach out to those people, whether it's on a message or a text or a phone call. That still has to be done. That's the activity that leads to revenue.
Yeah. And I haven't been in the field lately. And I'm thinking, if I went to somebody on my team and I said, look, I need you to come up with content that's interesting, just right there. It's like, you need me to what? right? And like one of the things that we've seen working is like a pre-written text message that says, hey, I'm doing some market research. Love to get your feedback. If I sent you a 1-minute survey on wind, solar, and energy, or on health, nutrition, and mindset, or on whatever it is, would you take it? Now, that's something, especially if it's pre-written, I can get every single person to text it, send it on WhatsApp, Telegram, social, Messenger, whatever, and I can get everybody to do that. And then if they don't respond, you send them a question mark, and then they do respond 90% of the time, and then you send them a fun, light, discovery-based survey. And those are the kind of things I think as leaders, I mean, I'm curious what your thoughts on that. But it seems like that's something I can get everybody to do. Now, they can use whatever channel they want, but at least you're giving them some tool that they can actually use to go prospect.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very creative way of getting people to take a look at or consider. Obviously, that survey would be specific to whatever type of company or brand or category that person's marketing. I wouldn't say that's a heavily used thing in network marketing, but I would say that it would be advantageous for people to do. Same thing as me, you giving me a pre-written text, because the thing is, like, a brand new person of no influence that's never done network marketing, all of us are works in progress. We can all develop the skills. We can all, over time, acquire the knowledge, the skill sets, and the confidence, and that's a process. But in the interim, like, when that person's new, like myself, when I first started in network marketing, I was handed a script, and I was given a script, and I had to memorize the script and practice it until it became conversational. And then I could pick up the phone confidently and make a call. And maybe I was reading from the script, but it didn't sound like I was reading from the script. Or the same thing with text messages. You give somebody a pre-written text message, say, hey, Patrick, Todd Falcone, what's up? Listen, man, I just launched a new business. I'm super excited about it. I'm all in. You're one of my best friends. I'd love to show this to you. If I sent you this 15-minute video, would you take a peek at it? Giving them the words to use. And
that's
then,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's so powerful. And it seems so simple, but you tell the average person, hey, I just need you to send them a text and invite them to watch this video. And then the person sits there on their phone for like 15 minutes, frozen, trying to figure out what 10 words go in the text versus just saying, here are the words. Here's the video. Here's the survey. Deliver it this many times today. Like, I think sometimes we've lost it. I told you I went to this training and I was just like, this gal was obviously successful, but she's telling them all to become influencers, that they have to build their brand. They have to become a thought leader. And it's just like, wow, I don't know how you'd create momentum and duplication and build depth.
No, I mean, look, again, I mean, if somebody could look at what they do and if they're good at something, whatever that thing is, and most people can create a following around something that they have a level of expertise in, whatever that is, skiing, fishing, knitting, who knows? I mean, I got guitars hanging in my background. You could create a huge following just teaching guitar. Of course, none of that has anything to do with network marketing, but what you're doing is you're creating an audience where you have something in common with that audience. The fact that you are both musicians, or the people that are following you want to be musicians.
Right.
And that's going to create an audience for you where you could monetize that. But again, if I decided to start a YouTube channel, I'm doing guitar instruction, and I started today, I've got no people, then I got two, then I got three. And these are followers. And I'm doing that to go grow my network marketing business. It's going to be, who knows how long, a year or 2 years before I pull any business out of that. Instead, right. I'd rather have my new person going, okay, who are the 10 sharpest people that you know? Let's go talk to those people and put them in front of a video.
Everybody should know about Todd. He moved to the Pacific Northwest, and he's obviously a guy of many talents, guitar, fishing, mountain biking. I mean, you're all in out there, Todd. A couple questions for you real quick. As a distributor, what's the one book that you might say, and I know there's tons of them for you, but what's one book you might throw out right now from a distributor or rep, agent in the field, associate in the field? What's one book you think that maybe is a little bit more advanced that people should read?
I mean, honestly, it's not even an advanced book, but it's always on my desk. It's literally right here. It never leaves my desk. It's called The Success Principles by Jack Canfield. That book is like, principles never change. Mm-hmm. And if you're applying the proper principles to whatever business that you're in, you're going to succeed. Now, it's not a prospecting book. It's not a recruiting book. It's not a networking book. It's a success book. And literally, it's like right here. I'm looking at it.
I can't find mine, but it's sitting here somewhere, and it reminds me. It's such an extraordinary book. Yeah.
And you can read it and reread it and read it again. And I mean, we started going to like book recommendations. We'd be here for the next 9 hours. But Then there are so many great books that you can read. And one thing I like about books is they're so cheap. It's like the cheapest investment you could ever make, right? If somebody goes and buys like an audio program for me or something, they're going to spend $300-$500 on something. And it's great, but you can get so much knowledge for $10.95, $9.95, $22.95 or whatever a book costs you, and keep that next to your nightstand and be reading that. So that's something we got to be doing every day anyhow. It's just
And how about from an enterprise, a company level, right? Companies trying to support their field. Obviously, the perspective is a little different there. Anything that jumps out at you there?
I think every owner should probably read the book Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion by Robert Cialdini. I think it's C-I-A-L-D-I-N-I. I don't know if it's Cialdini or Cialdini, however he says it, but I think that would give some of those owners insight on in terms of putting out content and information for their distributor force that is persuasive. Look, when you and I first started in this business, all we wanted the company to do is like send us our checks on time, deliver the products on time. If there's a problem with a customer, deal with it. And yep. We have always in the field been the marketers. We are the marketing arm of the company.
Mm-hmm.
Every distributor, like we're the people that go out and sell the stuff. We're the people that go bring the people to the table. So for the most part, and I still think it's pretty much the same almost across the board today, is if you come into a company and you're building a business, I expect products to be shipped on time, good quality products. If they screw up, they make good. They calculate commissions. They pay commissions on time. They treat their distributors with respect. And of course, it's a two-way street, vice versa. But still, I think most of the time, the info that's being brought out into the marketplace for most people is probably coming from the independent distributor.
Yeah, that's a really interesting insight, though, for a lot of organizations, because you see different approaches from an enterprise, from the company perspective. And it's either one of three things. Either they just let the field handle it, which tends to work pretty well. Obviously, they've got to navigate the compliance part. Any thought on that? I mean, how do that if they leave it to the field with all the compliance that is out there today, FTC, SEC, et cetera? How do they navigate that? Any thoughts there real quick?
Well, I think anybody who's going to be putting together a presentation for people to access, let's say I went and I'm going to produce a Zoom video or a video on 4K with a DSLR camera, and I'm talking about the opportunity, the products, the business, whatever. First of all, if I'm in a leadership position, I should know what's right and what's wrong, what I can do and what I can't do. And if you don't know and you're already in that position, there's a problem. You know you can't be making lifestyle claims, income claims, product claims. So those are things that leaders should be aware of. And I think most companies have good or at least decent compliance department where they're keeping an eye on what's being disseminated out in the marketplace. Problem is also like a lot of companies have marketing people. And look, if you're a network marketing company owner and you're hearing this, hopefully you just hear this and you don't take it the wrong way, but you hire a marketing person and that marketing person puts together a PowerPoint presentation or puts together a business opportunity presentation on video. Does that person have any field experience whatsoever? Are they a marketing person? Because it's a totally different set of eyeballs when it is a field person who is putting together an opportunity presentation than somebody who has marketing savvy without having the field experience. Presentations done by people in the field are always right. Better than someone who doesn't have that experience.
It's a real struggle. So I was saying these three levels. One is you let the field do it. Two is you let the field do it, but you co-create with them. You try to put your muscle and resources, but you don't take on the role. You empower them and co-create. And then the worst of all scenarios is they just try to do it. They think they're the marketing arm and they try to create everything and then they get no uptick or usage. And that's a struggle. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Well, listen, what's a target market for you? I mean, Todd, today, are you mostly coaching, working with organizations, and how do people reach you on either front?
I mean, the easiest way to find me, to follow me, to catch me is toddfalcone.com, which is toddfalcone.com. I push out new, fresh content on video every Monday that gets ripped into a podcast. And I'm just pushing out value to the, really, I mean, I'm serving, I get hired by company owners to come in and speak for their national conventions or whatever, but I'm really there to serve the needs of the distributors. You might write the check to me for me to come in and speak to your people, but you're having me come in to inspire these people and to teach them to be better, to be able to do more, to feel more comfortable and confident in building a distributor network. So I work with leaders in the field and I work with company owners who have me come in and do their national conferences and international events, Super Saturdays. So kind of all of the above.
Well, awesome. Well, man, it's been great spending time with you today. I appreciate you so much being on, and I'm sure we're going to stay in touch.
Absolutely. No, it's great to be with you, and I'll look forward to hanging out one of these days again soon.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Network Marketing Dream with Patrick Shaw. For more insights on building a solid networking business, visit our website at rapidfunnel.com/MLM. If you loved our content, please share, like, and subscribe. We look forward to seeing you in the next episode.